Hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast, starring Matt Levy and Mike Staub. We love video games and have embarked on a journey to index the greatest video games of all time into our very own Hall of Fame. Here's the show. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. This is a little different this week. Me and Mike, our schedules didn't quite line up, so I kind of threw something at him last minute that we could record separately that I could provide for you guys. And the topic is not necessarily a Hall of Fame game, but Hall of Fame game collecting. Collecting video games is an art in itself, and how we all enjoy this hobby is quite different, and it's changed so much. Not just the physical versus digital, how you purchase your games, but then also the whole sealed, graded, complete in box versus I like to open and play my games collections. Let's kind of give a little history on how I can collect video games and how I play games and how I've enjoyed games throughout my life. And then I have for you a audio from Mike telling a little bit of how his journey is. And they're very different, and there's no right or wrong way to enjoy it. Actually, some people might say what I do is wrong, but let's go with sort of a little history lesson first. I've been gaming since the NES as a late 30s. Now I've been playing video games since the 80s. And at that age, obviously, when you're a kid, you don't have expendable income. So you get whatever games you get for birthdays and holidays from friends and relatives. And the first thing most normal kids do is they rip a box open. They take the manual out. Maybe you read the manual, maybe you throw it aside and you play the game. And some people don't put it back in the box. Some people don't even keep the box or the manuals. They put it in one of those storage cartridge things or throw it in a box. Different people did different things. I was a little better about not beating them up, but I don't think I kept the boxes or kept them in good shape. I don't think I put them back in the original box. But I was a kid. I was 4, 5, 6 years old. Then with the Super Nintendo is when I started to outgrow my brother in terms of our personal enjoyment in video games. He sort of got involved with other things, and I was gaming more and more than ever. And that continued through Super Nintendo, N64, with my friends and on my own. And still, like a normal kid, had a few, probably 10 to 15, 20 games I owned per console. I didn't have a ton, but I played the heck out of the games I had, good or bad. And every time I got a new system, I generally was trading in my old systems. I would go to places like Funko Land. We didn't have eBay yet. And I would trade in. Sometimes I would get $10, $15, $6, $7, $5. And the way my parents saw it is that they'd have to spend as much out of pocket. I'd trade in games to get new games. And the way I saw it is, I'm not going to play these old games. The new, better graphics are out. So I didn't keep my NES when I got an SNES. I didn't keep my SNES games when I moved on to N64 and so forth. So that made it harder. Some people still own their original NES, SNES, N64 games. Some people still have those consoles. I traded those consoles in. And I'm not the kind of person that revisits games too often. I like to, just like my movie watching, I like to have diverse experiences and try new things and play new things. And with video games, I don't generally play a game I've played before unless it's a short visit, like a Super Mario World, Super Mario Brothers 3, something you can beat in a day or a weekend. But anything long, an RPG, a long story mode game, I'm probably not going to play more than that one time. Maybe I'll come back to it in 10, 20, 30 years if there's a remaster or a port, but very rarely am I going to go back. And the hardest part is, especially today, you need a CRT. You need the stuff. And I'm just not a stuff person. I'm a minimalist. The reason is I know who I am as a collector and as a hobbyist. And if I start going down a rabbit hole, I'm going to go deep, deep into that rabbit hole. When I owned Dreamcast games, I went and bought as many. When I bought GameCube games, I started collecting hundreds of them. DVDs, I had over 1,000 DVDs. Then I had over 1,000 Blu-rays, and then almost 1,000 4K Ultra HD movies. And for me, it became too much. It was just stuff that was sitting on my shelf. And I eventually sold off all my movie collections. I now have a Movie Anywhere account where I have about 200 movies I could stream anywhere. And although I am very much about pixel quality and good bit rates and not streaming, there came a point in my life that I didn't like having all the stuff around, stuff that's getting scratched and beat up and dusty and losing its value. Actually, today, probably some of the stuff's gaining in value. But for me, it was just more and more stuff. And it became, how do you store all these things? So I was always about physical collecting. And like I did back in the day, as I got older, with Xbox 360, Wii U, you name it, the console, I liked to buy the games because after I played them, I would sell them on eBay. I just stopped trading them in places because I figured if I buy a game for $60 or $50, I could generally get most to or close to that amount of money back, $30, $40, and buy something else with that money. And what I found was it made the hobby or the being an obsessive gamer less expensive of a hobby. I wasn't spending as much of my own money because I would trade two or three or sell two or three games in to buy one or two new ones. And that was a good way for me to keep the cost of entry for some of this stuff. Because when you have multiple consoles, I had 360, PS3, Wii U, and you're buying sometimes two or three games a month, it can be very, very expensive to be a gamer. I was sometimes spending probably thousands a year on new games. And some I'd play for a couple hours and some I'd play for more. So it probably wasn't till the Switch that I went full digital. Now, on the 360, there were some things because of Xbox Live that you had no choice. They were digital only. And for me, that was a weird thing. I'm not having ownership, not being able to sell it back. I make regretful purchases. So having the ability to resell it or refund it was a nice thing on Steam. I've done that countless times where I own over 400 games on Steam, but there's probably another 100 that I've refunded that after a few minutes, I just regretted my purchase. And I love that about Steam. But again, with the Switch, the reason I finally went digital only is because it's truly a portable console. And I've always been a console gamer. And with portable consoles, if I own 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 games, I don't want to have one of those cases with multiple little discs in it that are going to get dirty, beat up, lost, especially with my children now also gaming. It just was a no-brainer in this era of gaming, in this console generation, to go digital only. And I did that also with my PS5. And something I don't regret because of how convenient it's been traveling, doing different things, having 50 to 100 games on my Switch that I can swap out on my SD cards. But there's probably, of my 300 plus games, probably 50 or 100 that I would have liked to have sold back or sold on eBay after I beat them or if I didn't like them. And that's something I can't do, unfortunately. So, A, it's probably protected me from myself of selling things quickly. But B, I probably could have recouped some of this money. If I had to guess, I probably spent $5,000, if not more, on all my Switch games over the last 7 or so years. So that's how I collect. That's how I play games. But that's not how I collect games. For me, the hobby, some people collect video games for it looks nice on their shelf, and they like to see all of the Super Nintendo or N64 and seeing the boxes. And some people play them, some people don't. Some people just like the collecting side of it. But there's also this other side of the market that's grown in the last 5 to 10 years. I respect and I take my hat off to someone that had the discipline to not open up every game they bought as a kid or as a teenager or as an adult. Because that's why we buy video games, to open them up and play them. And when I talk to people who says they buy two copies of a game, one to play and one to keep to store somewhere, I think that's fascinating. And people don't like this. People say I'm ruining being a game collector, but I purchase complete in box and sealed games in the hopes of getting a really good grade from one of the grading companies. And the reason I do that is A, for me, I feel like I'm preserving a piece of history. When I hold these old retro video games from my youth, I feel like I'm holding an old Spider-Man comic, an old Superman comic, an old Batman comic, something that I did 10, 15 years ago. I was big into comic book collecting and very, very high grade classic key issues, specifically Grails. And I saw the game market being something that was sort of ignored in that same sense. And now everyone's in on it, but a few years ago, not so much. And sometimes when I hold Pokemon Yellow in my hands, a complete in box or sealed copy, I go, well, this is one of maybe 50 or 100 of these in the world. When I hold a copy of NES Zelda in my hand, sealed, It's probably one of 15 or 20 in the world. And that's where I feel like I truly am holding a Van Gogh or Monet. I'm holding something that's a piece of history that means a lot of value. Now, some people say, oh, there's people driving up the market and it's not all legit. But there's probably some of that that happens. But for the most part, I follow the community. I'm on the forums. I talk to people on the live streams during the auctions. They're gamers like myself that love these games, that grew up with them, and it's now 30, 40 years later, and they want to own the game again, and they want to put it on their shelf or put it in their closet and own something that is almost basically one of a kind. So I did it at first because I wanted to re-own some of these games, and then I saw I could actually flip and sell some of these games for good value. And it was a good little side hobby in the beginning of the pandemic, just before and during, when things really bloomed and peaked. And I learned a lot. First off, one thing I learned is there's a big difference between collecting cardboard box games versus the jewel case and DVD box cases, because there's a higher expected grade on a jewel case or a DVD case because they're much more durable. A cardboard box very easily can get dented, the corners get beat up. So to find something 9.0 and higher in a cardboard box, that's phenomenal. I mean, that is amazing for just about any game. But then if you're looking for a jewel case or a DVD case, something from the PS2, PS1, GameCube, Wii eras, if it's under 9.0, it's like, do I really want to own that? Because most games just in decent condition over 9.0, that's like the average. You really want like the 9.6s and the 9.8s. So it's very different collecting more modern, and those are still retro, but some more modern consoles versus the real retro stuff. So I do try to stick to the cardboard box. I've got burnt a few times on purchasing old copies of Twisted Metal and old copies of other PS2 and Wii era games. And unless they're absolutely gem mint, if you're not purchasing something that looks perfect, it's got to be a long-term investment. It's not something that you will be able to resell quickly and make your money back. So some of the games that I did really well on, and I kept kind of a list. I've kept kind of a list over the years, and there were a few that I broke even or even lost a few dollars on. And that was based on not getting the kind of grade back I was hoping for. When you send in to WADA or CGC or VGA, and you send a game that you think might be an 8.5, and it comes back as a 7.5, well, that could tremendously hurt the value of reselling it. But then again, if you send in a game that you think could be an 8.5 or 9, and it comes back a 9.2, well, now you probably made out pretty well. So to go back to the beginning, I was buying a lot of what they call Game of the Year Edition or Player's Choice, which are basically like the top sellers. The Nintendos of the world would re-release towards the end of their life cycle. They'll re-release games like Super Mario All-Stars and Mario Kart and Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo, but with a little logo stating that it's the Player's Choice version. And the problem with that is it's people want the first prints. People want the low production early ones because those are probably more commonly opened. People are opening the game the first few years because it was exciting, it was new. And the later prints, probably people just purchased and kept for whatever reason, or they were left somewhere in a warehouse. So I lost probably in the beginning on copies of Player's Choice games that just don't have the same value. And for some games, people are willing to just purchase any copy. So they're willing to take a Link to the Past Player's Choice because they can't afford to own a earlier production run of the game. So that's where you will still get people interested in it. But I did get burned early on some of those. But Link to the Past, I did very well on. I had a VGA 80, which is VGA's grading at 80 is considered near mint. Well, that's probably something like 9.2 or higher with a WADA. But I did have a WADA Link to the Past Player's Choice 9.8 A++. And both of those, I got around $3,000. And I paid less than half that for them. So again, when it works out in your favor, it's a really good investment. And you can make some good money on them, but you really have to know what you're doing and get prepared to either hold a game if the market's not there, or lose money in certain ones if you don't have the bank account to withstand some hits. So some of the ones that I was most excited for, games that were hard for me to part with because not only the copies so beautiful, but they were games that I absolutely adored and loved. So one was an early copy of Pokemon Yellow. And what's interesting is I had a decent copy and then I had basically a mint copy. I sent them both in. And one of them came back at 8.0, and I sold it for $1,600, which is, a lot of money, but not for a copy of Pokemon Yellow. Then I sold a copy of 9.6 Pokemon Yellow, sold for almost 4,000. So you're seeing a copy from 8.0 to 9.6, more than over two times the value of it, just because of the much significant higher grade, which is it's cool. It's really neat to see those type of things happen. Some of the other more impressive purchases over the years is we had a copy of Pokemon Blue, came back as an 8.0, sold for 3,000. I've had copies of, and again, Player's Choice, Super Smash Brothers Melee, 9.8 A plus, sold for 440. Now, if that wasn't a bestseller or Player's Choice, it'd be worth probably over 2,000. But still, that happened to work out pretty well in terms of being a 9.8. I've had many copies of Ocarina of Time. I actually just purchased my fourth copy, but my two best ones that I was most proud of was a 9.0 A plus that I sold for 3,000, and then a 9.4 A plus that sold for 4,500, which we call certain games a grail, and you get them in the right condition. And a grail is basically something that's like almost one of a kind. There's only a few of them in that kind of condition. Mega Man X, a favorite of mine, got a 9.6 from WADA, sold only for 1,200 because, again, it was a late production, which said made in Mexico. So it also matters what production run it is. That matters more in the NES games, where you see actually the logos and the box and the seals, all very, very different. Probably my two highest graded games that I've bought and sold thus far is I purchased a sealed copy of Super Mario Bros. 2 on the NES. And from the eBay listing, it looked perfect. It looked beautiful. And I paid, I believe, close to 3,000, if not more, for the copy. I sent it out and it came back as a 9.8 A plus. Now, it wasn't a first print, but you're still talking about a game that is incredibly old, 1988, incredibly rare in any condition, sealed. So that I got $7,600 for, which was a tremendous value. I had people actually offering me off eBay 9 and 10,000, and I kept the auction going and probably should have taken some of those high offers. But my best one to date was just recently. I purchased a sealed copy of Legend of Zelda on the NES, and it was a later production copy, but it looked near perfect. And I believe I spent close to $4,000 on the auction, maybe a little more. And it came back as a 9.2A seal. So you're talking about probably one of the top 10 highest grade in that version of that seal, of that box, that cardboard box, the way the box does change about three or four different times in this revision. But I did make a sale of almost $9,000, which again, I was hoping for 10 or 12 or 15. But some of those items I probably should have put like in a more private auction. I've used eBay. I'm going to experiment with things like Heritage in the future, because I think on these private auctions, when you have something very desirable, it brings out people, some of the big people in the industry, people that are really following the scene. On eBay, things kind of come and go without sometimes people even seeing them listed. So when you have a focused auction, 30 to 50 to 100 video games, they really don't get missed. So that's kind of just a short list of some of the games that I've purchased over the years. And is that good for the hobby? I think so. I think it's created a whole different version of the hobby, and it's preserving these games in amazing condition. Now, is it harder for those people out there like Mike that want to buy maybe a complete in box version of a game? And now, because people like me are buying those complete in boxes and grading them, it's driving up the price? Yes. But you could still buy loose cartridges of most games, pretty inexpensive. You can buy loose cartridges of just about any game out there. It's pretty inexpensive as well. You can get anything. Super Mario Brothers 3, NES Zelda, you can probably get it for 20, 30 bucks still. So if it's just a loose cartridge, you want to play the game, that's fine. But if you're looking for something in the box with the manual, yeah, you're going to pay probably a few hundred dollars, something even in just in below average condition. So everyone collects differently. Everyone enjoys this hobby differently. I really enjoy the grading scene. Complete inboxes, I haven't spoken too much about those. Most of the games I talked about were sealed. I don't have a lot of faith in the complete in box, just like kind of Player's Choice copies. I don't think they hold as much value. I just don't find that it's going to be as desirable as something that's really something brand new, something completely sealed. So that's sort of my rant on it. I enjoy the search, the hunt for finding new sealed games. I find like each day, each week, there's less out there. Finding locally at shops these days, people know what they have. Estate sales, garage sales, eBay. Generally, it's harder and harder to find sealed games out there that are loose, in good condition, that haven't been already graded. So the part of that is still the hunt and the fun of it. But for me, I praise and I love that Mike has all these classic retro consoles. He's got the CRT. He's got the setup. There's no emulation. He's getting the full experience. And when I want to play a game, I'm probably loading up some emulation device or some Nintendo Switch Online and playing a modified version of the game. But I've just never been an original hardware guy because I know this many years later, it takes having the right wires, the right TV, the right stuff. And I'm just not a stuff guy. But all the love to people out there that have the analog pockets, have the original hardware, play the real cartridges. It's an awesome way to experience some of these amazing video games. And that's why we do this. We love video games. I don't love them any less because I don't have loose cartridges that I play with. I love it just as much. I love the historical aspect of it. I love looking at the cover art, looking at the boxes. So you can see the various types of collecting people do. Some people collect games that they have nostalgia for. It's not necessarily about what's going to be worth a lot of money. They want to encapsulate and keep the best sealed copy or the highest graded, nicest looking version of their favorite game. I like to collect the major franchises because I feel like if this market ever goes down, the popular, it's like the stock market. If you stick to Apple and Google and certain key names, you'll never get hurt in the stock market. And gaming is sort of the same thing. If you're collecting games and you're collecting Marios and Zeldas and Pokemon, you're probably not going to get hurt. Any of those games will retain value, whether it goes up a little bit up and down over time, sure. But if you do decide to buy a high-grade sealed copy of Bill Laimbeer's Basketball, well, that's a little more obscure. And although it is rare, it might not be something that attracts a mainstream audience if you try to resell it. So again, I try to stick to the Sonics, the Marios, the Zeldas, and even some franchises that I enjoy, things like Dragon Ball. It's something that I'll enjoy because it's a game that I happen to have loved and I have the nostalgia for it. And everyone has childhood memories of certain games that they want to now, as an adult, own again. And that's what a lot of the market, I believe, is. People my age, maybe even slightly older and maybe slightly younger, that want to own a piece of history. And it's not cheap to grade a game. It's gone up and down over the years, but you're probably looking at, on the average, $75 to $100 to grade a video game. Now, that does range based on its age, its value. Is it sealed? Is it complete on box? Some of them can be $150 or $200 to grade because you have to now pay a higher insurance to send it in. So there are risks involved with all of this, but we're still catching up. Comic books have been doing this, and the market is tremendous for years on end. The video game grading market is still in its infancy, I'd say. It's been around now, and it's a little more mainstream than it was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago. But it's still sort of, we're not there yet. People are still keeping their sealed games not graded. So this is not stuff you see on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. But we sort of have, because in the last 2 weeks, we have seen some early first print copies of both Kid Icarus and Castlevania come up on eBay auctions, where most stuff like this doesn't show up on eBay. Most times you have something that's of high value. Once it's over the $5,000, $10,000 range, you generally see it in a Heritage or Golden auction, because those are private auctions where you bring out the real heavy hitters. People tune in to see a focused private video game auction of rare items. You go on eBay, you're going to find 1,000 used copies of Castlevania. You'll find 1,000 used complete in box or just cartridge loose versions of a lot of these games. But if you tune in to some of these auctions, you'll see stuff that maybe there's only 5 or 10 or 15 of these in the world. So that's why both of these sold for over $80,000 to $90,000. The copy of Castlevania sold for close to $90,000. And this became mainstream. It went on Kotaku, PC Gamer, a lot of these websites that normally wouldn't talk about sealed video games or graded video games. But this was sort of an event that kind of moved the whole market because this was a grail. This is such a rare copy of this title. You don't see first run early prints. And there's something really special about the early prints of Castlevania and Kid Icarus. The hang tab was actually cardboard built into the box. So again, very, very different than the games that you generally would see on Nintendo, Super Nintendo, and elsewhere. The date of the sale was March 23rd, 2024. And this is a sealed copy with a hang tab. Again, it's built into the box versus those plastic hang tabs that you would see for other early productions of games. But the first run of some really old, old games had a built-in hang tab. And to find it in this type of condition is almost unheard of. The copy of Kid Icarus that sold April 4th sold for $81,988. Perfect mint condition. I don't know if that one's been graded. The Castlevania graded very high, I believe a 9.4. And people think it could be worth $30,000 to $40,000 more than the buyer purchased it for. But the market is really fun. Other people say, well, what's the point of owning it if you're not going to play it? And I understand all those things. And you can say that about comic books or magazines or anything that people keep as collector's items. A lot of people buy action figures and they keep them sealed. Can't you say the same thing and say, hey, that's a toy that's meant to be played with? It's for me, owning a piece of history, knowing that some of these had hundreds of thousands and millions produced, yet there's only a handful of them that are sealed in the condition that we find them in today. That's astonishing. Talking to people that say, I had this in my closet for 20 to 30 years, and I'm deciding to part with it. But that's sort of my collecting experience in 2024. I'm probably not going to buy too much on the physical side. I don't buy many special or collector's editions. Not a stuff person, but I do love it. I respect it. I think it's beautiful. I love that people do enjoy these things, and I hope they continue with physical because I think it's good for the industry. The shame of it for me is when I buy something digital, it's not necessarily cheaper. I think it should be because when something is printed on a disc and put with cover art and shipped out, there's got to be a cost to that. And we haven't gotten an age yet where the digital is that much cheaper. I still feel like I pay a premium or the same price for owning a digital copy that I know costs them less and the makers actually get more of the money. So that's sort of my thoughts, my rant, my feelings on collecting games and owning video games in 2024. Hey, guys, do what makes you happy. I love the industry. I love talking about video games, collecting video games. It's so much fun. So yeah, guys, we're going to leave some pictures and please leave some comments on the Instagram page. Here, I'll send it over to Mike.
Hey, everyone, and thanks, Matt, for tossing that over to me. Matt asked me to do a little recording on pretty much how I collect games in 2024, what type of games I buy, what games I open, things like that. And the hobby is great. Video gaming has seen a real renaissance. I think it's because a lot of the folks who grew up playing video games in the 80s and 90s have really kind of grown up and they continue to engage with the medium. They continue to engage with the games and the things that they like, and it's no longer like a taboo to like be a gamer or to spend time playing video games, whether you're playing by yourself or with your friends. I say this to people all the time, someone in their mid to late 30s now. I play video games mostly as a stress relief, as a way to escape, as a way to relax, as a way to chill out, the same way somebody might watch a movie or read a book or something like that. So to me, it's always been about like escapism and kind of getting away from the kind of stresses of everyday life. So that's what gaming is for me. Now, when it comes to like collecting, purchasing, and opening, and all that stuff surrounded around the medium, my mentality is that I like to buy physical when I can. I like to buy physical versions of the games that are important to me, the games that I really like, because one, I like seeing it. Like I like looking at the collection. I like seeing it all on the wall. If I have, because I have the space, I'm actually slowly running out of space, but it's one of those things. I like to have the games. I think they look really great when you have them displayed. And if you have the space for it, I think it's really good and really like artistic way to kind of collect games. And all, at the same time, as I kind of look at the bookshelf or the shelf that I have my games on, I can kind of page through it and say, and kind of see the different eras kind of move over time. And I can see like what I was into, like what games were so impactful that I feel that I felt the need to actually buy it physical and play it physically. Now, physical games are great in my opinion. And I, like I said, I like looking at them. They're not the most convenient, especially in this day and age where if you have a Switch or a PS5 or an Xbox, you can exit one game, jump out of one game and jump right into another without having to switch a disc out. I do find myself often just going, ugh, I got to switch the disc or I got to switch the cart. I know it's a minor inconvenience because that's what we did for years, moving cartridges out or taking CDs out. It isn't the most convenient in this day and age, especially with like a Switch where it's like this handheld console and you could just kind of pop in and pop out of games if you have them digitally. But for me, I do like owning the physical game when I can, especially if I think it's going to be something that's short printed or something that's in fear of being removed from a storefront. Now, I know there has been a push to be more digital when it comes to pretty much all media, whether it be movies, music, TV, and streaming shows, and especially video games. And I think video games actually probably made the push that way far earlier than film or TV. And it doesn't freak me out as much as it freaks out a lot of other people. And I think that's because I spent time working at GameStop, and I worked at GameStop for 4 years during college, and whenever a store would close, whenever a GameStop store would close, we would have to kind of figure out what to do with the inventory. And I think a lot of times the inventory is massive, especially when it came to used games. Like a store would close for GameStop and there would be like 400 copies of the prior year's Madden, and they just sit there because no one's going to buy it. So I think a lot of these companies are just looking at it financially. What I do hope is that because of the major retailers and a lot of the major publishers looking to kind of move away from publishing physical media or selling it in the stores, I really hope that boutique companies continue to do what they're doing by getting the rights or the license to make physical copies of games. I don't know if you all are familiar, but there's a company out of North Carolina called Limited Run Games. And you should definitely check them out if you're a physical collector like I am. And Limited Run Games is amazing. They make physical versions of a lot of games that don't get physical releases, a lot of indie games, but also a lot of older games or collections and things like that. They have some really, really great collections. And I've bought a bunch of things through them. And it's really cool. Like, you can go to their website, Limited Run Games. They do that. They have, like, I think they have books and strategy guides and things like that as well. It's a really cool shop. And if you check out their shop in North Carolina, I think it's in Raleigh, you can actually see that it's built to look like an old game store. And it's very cool. A lot of great people work for that company and do really, really cool stuff. So for people who are physical collectors like me, a shop like Limited Run is amazing. And because of the beauties and the progression of 3D printing, companies like Limited Run and other companies that do stuff like them, I don't just want to talk about them. There are other companies that do it. I just can't think off the top of my head any of the names. But because of 3D printing and kind of how that has kind of revolutionized gaming, especially retro gaming and classic gaming, they can actually like produce their own like Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis carts. So a few years back, Mega Man The Wily Wars, which was a game that never released in the United States for the Sega Genesis, but you could often get a repro cart for that, which a repro cart is when a company or someone, an individual, takes an actual Sega Genesis cart. So it could be anything. It could be any game you think of. And they wipe it and they replace it with the ROM for a game like Mega Man The Wily Wars. Now, the issue with that is that you're actually using games that are legit games and real games, and you're kind of getting rid of them, which I don't like. But now, because of 3D printing and things like that, you can actually go out and do that. And Limited Run has a bunch of stuff where they do like Super Nintendo games, and they've done a whole bunch of things. There's new Game Boy Color games coming out. Crunchyroll put out a game, a physical Game Boy Color game called Hime's Quest, which actually, if you have a Game Boy emulator or something like that, you can actually download the ROM for free off their website, Crunchyroll, the company that streams anime. And I bought Hime Quest. I have it in the box. I have not opened it because I think it was a nice piece to collect. And when it comes to collecting stuff, especially in the retro space, retro games have gotten really expensive, especially since COVID. We saw a spike in retro pricing since COVID, and it's been a huge jump. And a lot of games that were affordable are no longer as affordable, especially if you're trying to buy them complete in the box. And I think Matt can talk more about that because he's into buying complete in-box games and unopened and getting them graded and things like that, which continues to kind of like drive up the price of these games, which, hey, it's a collector's medium. I understand how collecting works. I've seen it happen with comic books and things like that as well. But when it comes to that, collecting games used to be a lot more affordable. So we've had to go through like other methods to kind of preserve video games and things like that. I actually am not a huge fan of emulation in terms of playing video games. I think that a lot of emulators leave something to be desired. I think that there always feels like there's something missing when playing a game on an emulator. And now, granted, emulator technology has gotten much, much better in the most recent years, but just look online to pretty much any company who has tried, or maybe not even company, any individual, any group who has tried to emulate the Nintendo 64. And it is not great, and it's always hit or miss, which is probably why when Nintendo started releasing N64 games on Nintendo Switch Online, they had such a problem, because I think it's just a very hard console to emulate. Now, I think emulators are vastly important, though, and I think the ROM libraries are vastly important, because emulators are, while in my opinion, might not be the best way to play a game, but they're very important to, one, experiential stuff. It's easy to run stuff on an emulator to show someone a game that might not have seen it before. Like, for example, Chrono Trigger is a game that probably goes for hundreds of dollars if you try to get the cart now, but you can play it on an emulator, right? Or you could try to get the game, the Nintendo DS version, which is also incredibly expensive, or you can play it on PC. To me, it's more about the experience, right, for people than necessarily playing the game for sure when introducing people to something else. Me personally, I try to play games as close to original hardware as possible. I'm a big fan on playing games on original hardware. I'm big on modifying consoles so that you can play them on modern displays. But when it comes to emulation, I think it's vastly important. I think it helps preserve the history, which we are sadly losing because of licensing deals and things like that. So that's also why I buy a lot of stuff physical in 2024, because there are games that we have lost to time. Try to get your hands on Marvel vs. Capcom 1. Try to get your hands on Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Try to get your hands on, well, for years, try to get your hands on the Scott Pilgrim game. It was pretty much absent from every digital storefront for like 10 years until they just re-released it a few years ago, and Limited Run Games did a physical version, which I bought. Anything that's licensed, I buy physically, because licenses expire and go away and you lose those games. For example, Shredder's Revenge, the newest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. If you're going to buy that, that's a game I would stress that you buy physical, because it's going to go away at some point, most likely. Or the Cowabunga collection, which is even more likely to go away because of Konami and how Konami does things. So those are types of things that I would buy physical. Now, I'm not like the world is ending, the sky is falling, physical media is going away, but there are some things here and there. And then granted, they are outliers and they are a select few of games that do run the risk of being kind of delisted forever or for large amounts of time. We actually just saw it recently with a bunch of the Tales games. The Tales games for, I believe, the PlayStation 3 and some other games, the Tales of series, which like Tales of Symphonia and Tales of Vesperia, Tales of Destiny games like that. We actually just saw Tales of Zillia 1 and 2 get removed from digital platforms. And there might have been a couple others, but I don't remember. And it's a moment like that, if you're really into those games and you had them digitally, you might, one, not be able to play them anymore, or two, you might not be able to get them anymore. So that's another time. Now, granted, once again, it is a select few and it is a small list, but if you're someone who really likes something, I highly suggest you buy it physical. However, in this day and age, it's very expensive to do that. So modifications are really important. Modifications for consoles, ODEs, which are disc emulators for consoles like the PS1 and the Sega Saturn and the Dreamcast, are really, really important because it allows you to kind of have access to a bunch of games. Or EverDrives. EverDrives are also something I use very frequently for the Genesis and the Super Nintendo and the NES and the N64, because a lot of those games are either so incredibly expensive that they're price prohibitive or cost prohibitive, or you just can't get them. But that being said, I still do like having the original carts if I can. I still have a lot of my games from growing up that I had when I was a kid. And I'm lucky that I didn't sell all of them. I sold a bunch of them, but I didn't sell all of them. And hopefully the kind of retro market for games is starting to come down in price a little bit as the demand drops because the price is far too high. So definitely keep an eye out on the internet if you're looking to get some physical versions of your favorite games. But for me, I do like to collect them when I can. I'm not really a huge game collector anymore. I actually rather just use the original consoles and play the games on an EverDrive or something similar, or play the games that I already own. I do have pretty much every major console that was released between the NES and now. And it's really great to go and do that. And I try to play them most often on CRT displays if I can. Currently, I have a PlayStation 2 and a PlayStation 1 and a Sega Saturn running off a Sony PVM with a SCART cable. So they run on RGB, which looks incredible. Watching and playing a PlayStation 1 game or even a PlayStation 2 game or a Sega Saturn game or anything really that's old, SNES, Genesis, all those consoles, playing them on a CRT, just it's the right way to do it. And it feels just incredible. And it looks even better. Like these games look so much better when they're run through a RGB monitor, because that's kind of what they were meant to be run on, and they look fantastic. It's probably the best these games will look, because modern displays really aren't great for it. Also, for those of you who have not heard me talk about this on the podcast a lot, modern displays often create some degree of input lag, which is why when you play a lot of older games on some sort of like retro service, it feels like you're not good at them anymore. And I tell this story a lot. I was playing Punch-Out on the Wii U Virtual Console, which is, granted, known for being like one of the worst emulators like ever. The Wii U Virtual Console was bad. The Wii Virtual Console was great, but when you move it to the Wii U, apparently it wasn't very good. So I was trying to play Punch-Out, and I was just terrible at it. And I was like, well, maybe I got old, right? Maybe my reaction time slowed down. And then I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking like, you know what? No, I have heard about this input delay type thing. So I took my NES out and I hooked it up to a CRT, big Sony Trinitron. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to play Punch-Out. So I put Punch-Out in, and not only was I good, I was better than I was when I was a kid. So that input lag is real. And in a game like Punch-Out, where timing is super, super, super important, you really do notice. So I try to play stuff on original hardware as much as humanly possible, because I think that really helps. When it comes to playing retro games too now and kind of keeping that passion open in my life, I have looked to companies like Analog. I highly suggest you take a look at them. They are a boutique console manufacturer. And what they do is they make modern versions of all the classic consoles. And now this is not some Retron thing that's like $100 or $80 or one of those little Abernick handhelds that's like $30 and you can load it up all games. There's nothing wrong with playing games there. I have no problem with that. But you do run into the issues where those type of cheaper retro-based consoles, like all those things, there does seem to be something lost in the translation, and it does feel very emulatory, which, like I said, is not a problem. It's just not how I prefer to play the games. Analog makes these incredible consoles that run natively HDMI. There is a minimal amount of input lag. They have great response to modern wireless controllers that are made by companies like 8BitDo. and it's amazing. I have an analog Super NT, which is their Super Nintendo. I have an analog Mega SG, which is their version of the Sega Genesis. And I think the most important piece that I have is the Analog Pocket. The Analog Pocket is essentially their response to the Game Boy. And one, it can play pretty much any handheld console cartridge. You have to buy some adapters for it, but it plays Game Boy Color and Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance natively out of the unit. And then you can buy adapters for Game Gear, and you can buy an adapter for PC Engine or TurboGrafx-16. But the most important thing about it is that it's FPGA, so it's field programmable array. And what that does is that pretty much turns it into the original hardware, the chipsets. So it's actually, you're actually playing it on original hardware. And the development groups and the people out there on the internet have developed all these quote-unquote cores. And the way these cores work is they're pretty much perfect versions of retro consoles and retro arcade machines and all of that stuff. So you're playing, you can play pretty much everything from classic arcade and Atari all the way up through like Game Boy Advance on this console, and it is pitch perfect. I've shown it to Matt. I've brought it to Matt's house a few times, and his reaction is that he's completely blown away by it pretty much every time I show it to him. It's an amazing, amazing special device, as is the Mister. The Mister is pretty much a very similar thing to the Analog Pocket, but the cores keep getting updated. And at this point, I believe you can play like up through like Game Boy Advance and like PS1, which was thought impossible. So those are really good retro devices and retro things to play retro games in 2024. And it's really cool. And you should definitely check out the Analog Pocket and the Mister. As for like games now that I collect a ton of Switch stuff. My Switch collection is probably my biggest collection of video games at this point. I have well over 100 or so physical games, probably close to 200 physical games. I haven't actually sat down and counted it. Obviously, I buy all the Nintendo stuff I love. I'm a big RPG guy. I always buy the physicals when I buy RPGs because they're typically short printed and they're typically hard to find, and they typically get incredibly expensive as time goes on. So I usually open all my games because I intend to play them. But there are a few that I refuse to open at this point. I refuse to open my Scott Pilgrim vs. the World game. I also refuse to open one of the Super Mario 3D All-Stars games that I bought because that game was delisted and we knew it was going to be delisted, which is a weird thing to do. But anyway, they did it. And most importantly, in this day and age and most modernly, I bought the ESRB version, so that means the United States version, of the Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster Collection. I think I bought it directly from Square Enix, and it cost me like, I think like $60 or $70, but the ESRB version of that game is shot up through the roof because they totally short printed it, and it's not easy to get. So that's a game I will never open. But I typically open all my games. Some stuff I don't open. If I buy like a collector's edition, like I bought a collector's edition of Final Fantasy VII Remake, I bought a collector's edition of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and those are the types of things that I will purchase and I will leave sealed, and I'll usually buy two so that I can have one to play if I want to play physical, or just buy it digitally after that. But the games that I buy and collect now, if I buy physical, are games that are special to me, games that I want on my game shelf, like you would want your favorite book series or your favorite graphic novel series or your favorite movies on a bookshelf. So typically it's a lot of RPGs, it's a lot of Nintendo stuff, it's a lot of platformers and things like that. Those are the things I'm always driven to. And I was trying to be really completionist with my collection early on and through the pandemic and stuff like that, and buying all the games that like I thought were cool or special that I wanted. But I kind of strayed away from that. So at this point, the only kind of games that I focus on collecting are the Capcom fighting games. So Street Fighter, Street Fighter 2, all that stuff. Darkstalkers and the Versus series and all of that. I have that, and usually I have import versions of them to play on my Sega Saturn, which is probably the best fighting game system of all time. If not, maybe the Dreamcast. The Dreamcast was really good too. So those are the games I like collect now. Like if I come across like Street Fighter 2 stuff, like I will buy it. Or if I come across any of the kind of physical versions of those classic Capcom fighting games, I will purchase them. So those are the things I collect. So yeah, I am kind of old school, but I do have a modern mentality with a lot of this stuff. I'm kind of split in the middle. I understand the importance and just the greatness of digital games. I understand the importance of stuff like Steam, especially since Steam sales are like ridiculously good. So yeah, it's a mix. It's a mixed bag, but in this day and age, for the most part, the stuff that I collect the most aggressively and the stuff that I buy physical are the games that are really special to me. All right, everyone, thanks so much for that. And thank you, Matt, for having me here talking about collecting games. So you'll catch us next time with a really nice and special topic. But Matt, thanks again, dude. Back to you.
Awesome stuff, Mike. As always, loved hearing about your collection. You have some really cool stuff. We're going to post the picture you sent of your collection. You're going to need a bigger shelf soon, for the record. But thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. Check out our back catalog. Go on the Instagram page. We're always posting stuff on there. And tell a friend. Leave a review. Do all the good stuff. And we will see you guys all next time.
From Mike and Matt, thank you for listening to the Hall of Fame Game Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Hall of Fame Pod or email us at thehalloffamepod@gmail.com. Please leave us a review and be sure to tune in next time.